Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
It's the Mitchin Podcast.
Hey, what's up, and welcome to a very special episode of The Mitchin. We are on location at the Lansdowne Hotel in Sydney, and we've got a bonus bunch of people.
normal bunch of people.
Yeah. My name's Andrew Levins, my co-host, as always. Mitch Orr is here.
What up?
And we have a couple guests, the masterminds behind the new refurb of the Lansdowne Hotel. You may know them from Mary's and the Unicorn. Here they are today with us. We've got Kenny Graham and Jake Smythe.
Hello.
Thank you for having us.
This is Jake's 10th time on the podcast and Kenny's first.
It's only Jake's second time invited, though.
Right. And returning from the Sydney Morning Herald's Good Food Guide, we have Callum Boyce.
G'day, mate.
Callum's got a special treat that we're going to be drinking in just a moment. But first, I want to give a little background on how cool this venue already is after only being open like a week. Two Sundays ago, we were all at the Dolphin for our friend Louis Tikaram. He did a takeover of the Dolphin, did a bunch of his EP and LP food from LA at the Dolphin. And I was amazed at how many people from the Sydney food, basically how many Mitchin guests were in that room. I think that, that it would be easier to count
all of them.
The Mitchin guests that weren't at the Dolphin at that very moment in time than the ones who were. It was just like an incredible kind of, you know, array of Sydney food legends and Tasmanian food legends. Even Roger and Sue were there.
Mm-hmm.
That the worst thing about the Dolphin, if you're there on a Sunday, which is like kind of the vibiest day most of the time, is 10 o'clock, those fucking lights get on, get the fuck out.
Yeah.
And chant began, let's all go to the Lansdowne, because it was like the soft opening weekend where you invited all friends to the Lansdowne. And so I got in an Uber with previous guests, Darren Robertson, Shaz and Mags, all got in the car with us, Mags from the past. We made it to the Lansdowne, and there were even fucking more Mitchin guests from the past. It was insane how many just like, you know, people from my lifetime had crammed into this venue that means a lot to me, I guess. So we revealed when Jake was last on the podcast that the first party I ever put on was on a Sunday afternoon at the Lansdowne about 4 months in a row. It was called the Awesome Lounge.
I think you'll find that this has also been renamed the Awesome Lounge.
We're sitting upon right now.
You can just have this area for your party.
Yeah.
We'll rope it off like a motherfucker.
But you know, I mean, like, you know, if for people that aren't aware of this venue, it's the one that Nirvana played at in the 90s when they toured Australia.
They got booked here. They never played here because they got too big.
Oh fuck, that's
they
right.
They got booked.
Yeah, they played down the road at the Phoenician.
But they
were meant to play here, so we'll take it.
That's how great a band is when they may or may not have played somewhere, makes the venue.
Yeah.
Like, goes down in folklore. It's like, they never even played there, but they never played there.
But they were supposed to. But, you know, it was absolutely one of the most important live music venues in Australia throughout the 90s. And then in the 2000s, it became, you know, a place to come and see free shows, free music. But maybe that led to the music at the Lansdowne not being taken as seriously as it should have been, because it was kind of this thing in the background. And so how long ago did the Lansdowne close?
Like 15? Closed in 2015, I think around the start of it. It's not been closed for too long. It's The hardest thing about this, a venue like this, is that when it closed, there was a public outcry. There was an outpouring of public kind of emotion about it. But the reality is no one was really coming here. It's not like they closed the doors on Sydney's most popular venue at the time in 2015. Yeah. It had come to symbolise, I think, the last of the ones that were standing in their old kind of selves. You know, the Annandale closed, reopened now, but, you know, completely different, owned by Oscar's Hotel.
Yeah.
You know, the Hopetoun's closed and doesn't look like it's reopening its doors.
No matter how many incredible people try and buy it or reopen it, it just ain't going
to
happen.
It's not. Yeah. I don't think so. Like, it's going to take a lot for that venue to come open.
I bought their fridge.
Did you?
Yeah.
Just stand out front.
There was a Mexican restaurant upstairs when the Hopetoun closed, and so they had to pretty much gut everything in like half a day because.
So you're the one that's been profiting out of this. You're behind all of these action groups, are you? Yeah.
Belly Bow, who took over the restaurant space when the dip left, they've got that the Hopetoun fridge. So if you want like a little piece of rock history, go order with something with mayonnaise from Belly Bow.
It's in my shed and it stinks.
I look like and they're like Sandringham was like had been redone, and you know it was when this closed it was a big moment in Sydney's kind of like, oh fuck, we just lost the last of them, didn't we? It was really the vibe, and it sat here being eyeballed as a music academy, and you know we've been lucky enough to have friends who've got pockets deep enough to buy it, and also. Fucking, they've got fucking kahunas enough to back us into, who've never run a live music venue before, into kind of the reimagining, like Lansdowne 3.0 maybe, you know, like, and I think we might just pull it off.
It's a bit of a perfect storm. Like, there's so many factors that had to come together for something like this to happen. Like, one, these fine gentlemen, like, stepping in to buy the place. Two, just giving us carte blanche to do what the hell we wanted to kind of get it back off the ground, you know. Three, that the political situation that people were like looking for like something positive to happen because it has been beaten down for so long. Like,
they're saving live music in Sydney. They're doing it.
Like, it just kind of all kicked off.
We're doing it.
Yeah,
we're doing it. We are.
But that was it. And like, then the media, if I can get on board, because you know, it's all they've been. I don't know. I know it's not true, but that air, like the feeling in the air that all you've been writing about is kind of negative stuff. Mm. So it's just kind of ticked all the boxes. So we're just right place, right time. Very lucky people. But I'm very.
And then the Rule Brothers on top of that, you know, who used to book the Annandale, huge part of it. You know, filling the void where we don't know how to run that side of the venue. Two fucking uber professionals who kind of got stung back in the day when their venue closed, and you know,
strangely
now they're
enough,
it's Oscar
Hotels bought here. And the Annandale. So, like, the two famous live music venues we bought. I don't know if you know, on the way to the airport, there's the... What's that massive hotel called in the corner? When you come off of the Princess Highway, there's, like,
huge,
a fucking big...
Is it the Southern Cross Hotel or something?
Something like that. It's like a...
You're the one
you
opposite...
Guys the pub, the pub
pokey
guys.
Fucking dungeon.
Opposite West Connects.
That. And they had... They bought the Annandale and bought here. They still have the Annandale, but punted this on a while back, but...
And the first thing you've done for live music is you've locked in three nights a week, Sunday Bloody Sunday, the U2 tribute show.
Wu-Tang Wednesdays. Yeah, absolutely.
Elton Jack's Tuesdays.
Fuck, I'd like to bring Whispering Jack Tuesdays back. Just have a guy on the fucking mullet. Just found a flano singing fucking Fonzie covers.
So we'll be speaking more about the venue later in the episode. And we've actually done a little tour, a tour video of the venue. If you can't make it to the venue for some reason, Jake's given you an access all areas pass to see what's inside this pub in the daytime. So that'll be up on
our... And a good shot of my legs going upstairs.
That'll be up on our page, facebook.com/TheMitchin. But before we get started into this episode, we have three bottles of incredibly expensive liqueur that our good friend Callum Boys has brought us. Callan, tell us the story behind this.
I get a lot of pretty awful press releases in my inbox as a food and booze writer for the Sydney Morning Herald in Fairfax. And I just picked this one onto you guys last week when I came along. So this is the Wu-Tang Clan Premium premium liqueur. Taster ruckus. I'll just read from the press release, will I? I think that's important. I think the press release sells it much better than I will. Straight from the streets comes a new party sensation. I think I'm pretty sure there is a signed off on this press release.
It's definitely not coming from a marketing boardroom somewhere. It's definitely straight from the
streets. They definitely brought Cappadonna back on board.
The new party sensation, the Wu-Tang Clan liqueur. The premium collection boasts four legendary flavors of cream, butterscotch, and strawberry slash lime.
My favorite Wu-Tang reference. All strawberry slash lime.
All set to drop in June. Notice we don't actually have cream here today, though. They didn't send me that when I asked them for a taste test sample.
It's too popular.
I don't think it's on the shelves yet. I looked at the Dan Murphy's website yesterday.
trying to get it past the FDA or whatever.
I'll also point out that these are $14.99 a bottle for 20% alcohol.
And well, like 700
mil. If you are 19, you are going to get ripped off this.
Yeah, 700 mil for 700
20%. 700 mil. How much does a bottle have to be classified as premium liqueur these days? Is 10 bucks the cutoff?
I thought
you didn't have to spell premium right.
Yeah. I thought this would have to be one of the cheapest liqueurs in Dan Murphy's. So I went to Dan Murphy's website last night and just did a search for all liqueurs and sorted by cheapest. Now, that's a good way to spend a couple of hours. Going through user reviews of like Dan Murphy's cheap liqueur is that if you got an hour, it's fucking great. Anyway, but the cheapest actually is Grunter's Wipeout Coconut Liqueur and Shaker Gift Pack.
Grunt. Grunt and Clan ain't nothing to fuck with.
Grunter's Wipeout.
It's a gift pack too.
Yeah. You get a liqueur and shaker for 750ml liqueur for $9.99 and that's 21% alcohol.
So, you want to show your dad you really care. Fucking spare tenner.
For a Grunter's Wipeout. Anyway, but this is the Wu-Tang, back to that, produced locally in Australia, the Wu-Tang Clan's premium liquor has been handcrafted to ensure party girls' taste buds are freestyling, just like the Wu.
Stop it. Handcrafted in Australia.
So what is this got to do with Wu-Tang?
Handcraft that colour, but they get a fucking bottle of fucking Betadine.
Do they even know this exists?
Well, yeah, I'm getting to that. Renowned music icon and the Wu-Tang Clan member, RZA, led the creative development of the bottle label, which is emblazoned on the iconic Wu-Tang Clan logo. Yeah.
How did they come up with that? Just put the Wu-Tang logo on it. Well done, RZA. You've done it again.
Divas Beverages, so they've made it. Divas, I looked into them. They're a company out of Dandenong. They look dodgy as all fuck. Divas Beverages general manager, Daniel Quart, K-W-O-R-T, was excited to launch the range in Australia. Music lovers across the country can now enjoy a taste of the world's most influential hip-hop group.
I'm going to let that one slide.
That's amazing.
That is low hanging fruit.
Yeah, I'm going to let it go.
That is a heavy peach liqueur. The perfect mixer of addition to any drinks lineup. We can't wait to see the response from Wu-Tang Clan to Wu-Tang Clan liqueur.
So when is it going on the back bar, boys?
Straight after this, mate.
Anyway, yeah.
Pay for this fucking joint. Free booze on sale.
With flavours that suit every taste profile, Wu-Tang Clan liqueur ain't nothing to mess with.
I didn't spell nothing.
No, nothing's an N-O-T-H-I-N apostrophe. Oh, because I think technically it should be a U, though, but anyway.
Classically, it should be nothing to muck around with. I couldn't say that.
Should we have a taste?
Yeah, what are we going to go with first? So we've gotten three flavours. Yeah. We have strawberry and lime. We have butterscotch. And then we just have original.
I think we should start with
original flavour. Right? Liqueur flavour.
Doesn't have a flavour.
The OG. Well, okay, so the press release says, is a classic drink made with the latest distilling techniques.
That's all the information I have on this. I Googled the shit out of it. There's nothing.
So this is distillate and sugar.
I think, from what I can tell, it's Sauvignon Blanc grapes.
distilled in a gravel pit.
Yeah. Anyway, ideal mixer to bring the ruckus to almost any cocktail and is perfect for jelly shots.
Wow.
Oh, wow. Jesus. Have you got any jelly on hand?
Pull it up.
Unfortunately, no.
Pull it up, Jakey.
Jake's on the thing. He's going to... are you guys ready to taste the ruckus?
Smells like watered down vodka.
It's also 11 a.m.
We've got a spittoon.
We've got a spittoon.
Yeah, yeah. And Mitch, by the way... don't be sitting around this table and be like worried that, oh, we're going to have our sensibilities rocked to the core by an 11 a.m. beverage.
Oh, it does not smell good. Okay, we're just going to go down. Everyone, 1, 2, 3, to Wu-Tang.
To Wu-Tang.
Yeah, that's not great. Mitch was the first to spit. I swallowed.
I drank it to get the full experience.
Yep.
It's like a really horrid distillate.
Yeah.
With a
little hint of vanilla.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And like slight bubblegummy kind of fucking notes. That's really
That's
terrible.
Completely what it is.
If this liqueur was a Wu-Tang member, which would it be?
Cappuccino.
That would be Ugon.
Ugon is a Ugon for sure.
Yeah, that's rotten.
Which is like,
I don't know how. Isn't like Ugon's
son a Wu-Tang member now officially? Yeah, maybe that's him.
He's probably in a
Solomon or something.
Yeah. I can see where they're coming from. Perfect for jelly shots if you wanted to just use that as a base.
Well, it just tastes like alcohol. Yeah, so if you're someone that's like, oh, I can taste the alcohol.
If you had that, you know, if you had like a double of that in like a vodka, like with tonic water, you could drink it. That and tonic. There you go, kids. That's my...
And that's 22%.
Wait, tonic with lemon. There we go.
Go easy on the passiona, kids. Jakey says tonic.
Tonic.
With some passiona. Sorry, with like Kirk's Pasito.
Yeah,
Pasito. That could be a good
You wouldn't spot. Want to ruin... You wouldn't want to ruin the fine quality of Pasito with that, though.
So we're going to move on to the butterscotch now, I think. That's important for you, strawberry lime. The butterscotch, which I think...
Hold on.
What are you doing?
You turn your mic off.
In the excitement, yeah. So we're going to move on the butterscotch now, which I think before we get to the strawberry and lime, because the butterscotch, I think, was leaking when they sent me the box anyway, because it's all I've smelt in my car for the last couple of days.
I thought that was your aftershave.
I can't see anyone from Wu-Tang admitting to drinking butterscotch.
Yeah.
There's something, it's way too British.
Oh, wow.
This
smells very,
I reckon,
very
I actually
artificial.
Reckon this is going to be the best one. Down it goes.
Oh, mate, but you give that a little swirl, and seriously, that butterscotch woof leaves, and you are left with a very stripped out...
Like the first one.
Yeah, like it smells like fucking strawberries, actually. Strawberry jelly. That aeroplane jelly, that's fucking weird.
Oh, it does. It's jelly crystals.
You hit the fucking butterscotch off it with a little bit of air, and it shows its true colours, which is just obviously...
Yeah, dyed
this
out
is
quickly,
this without
it?
This colour. They're all the same.
For something so sugary, there's like no viscosity. Like, it's just super watery.
Yeah.
I don't know how you managed to achieve that.
It is very sweet.
But I was like, it tastes way more alcoholic than just 20% as well.
Can you do this one with us where we do this and then we can get drunk? Because I can't fucking drink this. I'm notoriously known for fucking drinking basically anything that's put in front of me. If we found my line.
Mike Benny, I reckon we'll have a fucking case of these anyway. Like, you can tell him just getting so excited.
You would have
about
the worst
shit.
Headache after these.
Oh, mate.
Yeah.
The sugar come down would be fucking horrendous.
Yeah. And you're probably, like, most kids are probably going to be mixing this with sugar.
Yeah.
So I think in this case, that it might
Coke.
Actually be better.
Butterscotch and Coke.
Butterscotch and Coke. And, like, it'd be kind of better for you than drinking it straight.
So the final one off the bat is...
Strawberry/lime.
Strawberry/lime. Oh, wait. First of all, which Wu-Tang member was butterscotch?
Ghostface Killer.
Inspector Deck? <way. laughs> None of the heavy hitters get maybe this could be one of them. Oh god, this smells fucked. It smells so fucked. It is a bloody red as well. Like,
yeah, this red does not exist in
it's
nature.
Redder than grenadine.
Whoa.
Oh, god. Oh my god. Oh fuck, that was so bad. Oh my god.
That's really terrible.
It's medicinal.
It's beyond medicinal.
It gets worse like, the longer it's in your mouth, it gets worse.
It doesn't taste like strawberry or lime. No. Like the butterscotch tasted more like strawberry.
Yeah, yeah, totally.
It tastes a bit like strawberry jelly, like if you put it in your mouth and swish it around.
Yeah, yeah,
a bit.
Yeah. It tastes like shitty like aeroplane jelly. Well, shitty. Aeroplane jelly.
The concentrate stuff. You know, the stuff you gotta melt down.
Oh, well. That was, according to the press release, bursting with ripe berry flavour and lime juice. It's the drink to set fire to the night.
fire.
Wild for the night.
The thing is about this, you couldn't even set fire to it because it's too fucking shit at 20%. At least give it to it at 40, so like a 55 or something and fucking set it on fire. That's minging.
Yeah. Oh, well. Yeah, well, that's that. There you go, kids.
I'm sure
$14.99 a bottle.
I'm sure this is exactly retailers. What they had in mind when they sent it to you as well.
Where is this being stocked at, though?
It is Dan being Murphy's. Stocked at.
Let's tell the Mitch.
Yeah, Mitch and Listen QR is available online at Dan Murphy's or independent liquor retailers at $14.99 per bottle. But you know, if you go into Dan Murphy's, I do remember Grunter's Wipeout coconut liqueur shaker and gift pack for only $9.99 for the same ABV, same bang for your buck.
The Mitchin Grunters. Is now brought to you by Grunter's.
It's always been brought to you by Munters.
So you guys, you know, you've got a few pinball machines with rock bands emblazoned on them. Have you ever had an alcohol that was? I mean, I know young Henry's have done some collabs with.
I've had the AC/DC wine.
Oh yeah, how's that?
Terrible. Compared to this, better. Yeah, but it was fucking horrid. I mean, to be honest. It, you know, you could have picked up any clean skin from Southeast Australia, put it next to it, and they're just paying $10. You're paying $10 to have, you know, Malcolm Wine. Young yeah. on the thing. So, like, it wasn't that bad. It hasn't plunged the depths like this.
Strawberry wine.
The best thing we had was with no band names emblazoned on it. Is like Maynard Keenan's wines with like a cotta.
Yeah, his own wines by himself, but the one with Taras was by far and away the best.
Definitely,
yeah.
Have you seen? There's an image circulating. Maynard Keenan, whatever the fuck his name was, what's his name?
Maynard Keenan, yeah,
from Tool, the lead singer of Tool, and a perfect circle. There's an image circulating of him this week where he found out that people keep asking if his wine is vegan, and he found out that it is. So he put. He now puts bacon in his wine.
No, stop.
What a cunt.
That's
just
amazing.
So he can make sure his wine isn't vegan anymore.
Yeah, yeah, others, I love that though. It's like he's always known as like a little bit of a recluse, and that kind of move is just such a dick move. He could just fucking find it with some fish. You know, like you could just do something. You could just put a winemaking technique in there. I don't remember the last time I went to fucking Burgundy and like, and then we stir with the bacon. Like, fuck off.
Maybe Morrissey slept with his wife or something.
There's the Dan Aykroyd Crystal Skull vodka nonsense as well.
Which is a great bottle.
Is
that Dan Aykroyd, is it?
Dan Aykroyd owns it. Yeah, he comes out skull, once a year and gets his selfies with the bottle and pisses off again. Yeah, that's fine, but not probably $90 fine.
Have you got Ciroc? Ciroc on the back bar?
No.
Is that the Puff Daddy?
Yeah, that's Puff Daddy.
Puff Daddy. Oh, there's
No, we don't. Yeah.
Oh, we do?
Yeah, it might be that.
Yeah, you got Ciroc. Amazing. Yeah. In the building. So, guys, let's talk about Pete Wells.
Sure.
Are we talking about Noma?
Restaurant
are we talking
critic?
About Pete Wells?
Oh, we can talk about two. There have been two that have kind of.
I haven't heard about the second one. What's the second one?
The second one was Pete Wells came to Sydney at the time of 50 Best and ate at not many places. And then wrote an article about it. So he went to Esther, Fred's, Automata, and Momofuku and Fyodor. Yeah.
And wrote about it and said.
And wrote about it and
sorry,
said.
Sorry, catching me up on this.
Yeah, yeah.
And said, the food in Sydney is world class, et cetera, et cetera. But surprisingly, there's no Asian flavors being used.
Also, I love that he went to two restaurants that were staffed by, like, the head chefs are exceptionally not Australian.
Yeah.
In Fred's and Momofuku.
Yeah. World 50 Best or Tourism Australia have just brought him over here and just put him on a, you know, 2-day famil. Bang, bang, bang. He probably only spent like 2 hours at each restaurant, you know.
Yeah, I went to Esther just after Pete Wells had left, and then I was at Automata, I think, when Pete Wells was there, and then I sat next to Pete Wells at Fred's.
Where's your article?
Where did you put the ankle braces on?
It just really randomly happened that I was in each spot, and I think he knew that I was industry, and I'm pretty sure he was like, "Why is this guy never at work?"
Not the only one, money.
And the guys at Fred's had no idea. He was actually eating with an Australian actor, I think from Blue Heelers.
Yeah, good.
And
classic. No, sorry, that's some taste though.
Yeah, so all of
John Hughes.
I can't remember his
Lisa
name.
Lisa McKeon.
But the floor staff knew who the Australian guy was, but didn't know who Pete Wells was. So I actually went and said to the restaurant manager of Fred's that, yeah, that's Pete Wells, the New York Times critic, on the table next to me. I was like, oh fuck, thanks for the update. And then throughout the course of the night, once they knew, all the sort of Merivale bigwigs sort of filtered through just to make sure everything was all right. And you know, like, so yeah, it was pretty funny.
Got something to protect. I would do exactly the same if I found out the fucking mate. Whenever Callan Boyes comes down to Mary's, I make a beeline.
Where are they?
I make a beeline out the fucking door.
I love the idea of Mitch sitting next to Pete Wells at all these restaurants, just always making comments like, "Oh, where are the Asian flavors?"
It's a hell of a fucking thing, though. Like to eat at some of the most obviously European influenced. And then obviously
with the
exception of Paul, but so he is like, it's widely known where his heritage is, and that he's cooking food from his heritage, you know. So like, to choose those restaurants is either like, and then comment on that is insane. It's kind of like going to McDonald's and going, why the fuck is in their pizza?
It was a very narrow view of Sydney,
but he was positive.
It was so very positive.
A lot of people said,
"Yeah, it was very positive."
I think it's a good thing.
A lot of people sent it to us to our Facebook page, facebook.com/TheMitchin, and said,
"Congrats to all those restaurants in fucking good."
Just wondering if you had read this. This is from Billy. He said, "I'm a long time listener of the show, and when I came across this article, it came across as a little snarky, sort of like a backhanded compliment. The way I read it, another article on Sydney's art scene, to me felt a little patronizing, like from on high looking down." I'm fine with criticism. I mean, I know Sydney has a lot to live up to, and our nightlife has gone to shit over the years.
Look, I'll be honest, I was in New York City in fucking November, and restaurants, pound for pound, our fucking restaurants are killer.
Yeah.
You know, it's not saying New York City restaurants are shit or have gone to shit. They're some of the most world-class venues in the place. But you don't go on... There was a time when I went to New York City and was just experiencing things I'd never experienced in Sydney dining before. And now that's not the case.
Yeah, like, I come back and go, Sydney has this and maybe a little bit better.
Totally. And you know them, so you get better fucking hookups.
Yeah, exactly.
To be like devil's advocate, would you be like sheltered, like the restaurants you get told to eat at? Like, know that Phil Wood's like moving down south. Like, what are the cool restaurants? Like, are using Asian flavors? It's very much gone on a European slant in the last little while. I mean, like as an obvious thing, like, is that not a? I mean, what other ones would you say that?
Yeah,
if someone comes to town, you're like, go and eat there, and it's like, there's a massive Asian influence on it.
Oh, Mr. Wong, like
Acme,
where?
Boon Cafe,
Like, I mean,
I don't think. I'm picking up what Kenny's saying. Like, it's not so much a comment on the fact that restaurants aren't doing it, but to pick.
But to be honest, Automata and Esther are full of Asian influence as well. And if you're not picking up on that,
it might be a little bit more about you than them.
Yeah, you know. So, and that sort of plays into the other article, that comment about it, saying it's commenting from up high, looking down kind of thing from Pete's pedestal.
Yeah,
and that's sort of that Noma article that he wrote. Too, I found that really. Like, it was a while ago now, but I found that really sort of patronizing and closed-minded. So especially from someone that can fucking go and eat wherever he wants to in the world and probably skip all the bullshit of making it happen as well. Yep.
The article Mitch is talking about came out in May. Pete Wells put out an article saying that he refuses to go and eat at Noma Mexico because not everybody can, so why should he?
I think that's his fucking job
to go and eat and tell everybody about it in case they couldn't get there. That's the whole point of him existing.
That's true, but there's also like another tone to that which I definitely picked up on and I kind of resonate with, and that's the kind of, you know, the happy snapper jet set class going to, you know, an exceptionally poverty stricken part of a very poor country, taking photos of local women hand making the tortillas because I bet you the Noma kids can't fucking make them that good, and getting photos with them and exploiting that, and then everyone shipping out and going away and leaving no real trace of them, you know, an ongoing kind of commitment to that area. And I, like, that level of voyeurism, I think, has kind of reached peak at Noma, Mexico. Like, I was fucking rocked to the core by the kind of whole approach to it and the way they'd done it and, you know, the kind of seemingly lack of commitment to the area previous and post, you know.
Well, I kind of argue that because Renee is still in Mexico and, like, the pop-up finished almost a month ago now. And they're still there, traveling around Mexico and doing things in Mexico. And they did do a lot of research and build relationships with the Utican women. And they traveled all around the Utican into the villages and learning. And, you know, like the same as they did here going into Aboriginal communities and stuff when they came to Australia.
But those kind of that level of kind of educating yourself because you can doesn't go far enough, I don't think, because you come from a level of privilege. And you need to actually leave a mark that is positive for the people, not for yourself. Yeah, so if you walk away taking a whole bunch of amazing culinary experience with you from these people who are generously giving their time and energy to this person they've never met or cared about or ever heard of before, and you're the only one, you're taking and you're taking and taking, and then you're only giving the gifts that you think you know how to give, you know, like a little bit of culinary training on, you know, techniques that they don't give a shit about because they don't have the ingredients to cook them with, you know, like they, you know, it seems to me like a very, very, whilst it might be well-meaning, it seems to me quite a naive approach, especially for someone who's, you know, they've kind of done this before, and it feels almost like, hey, watch me go around the world and out-cook the fucking locals. And I was like, well, you know, good luck in fucking Japan. And in Australia, I ate the meal, and he fucking certainly didn't do it here either.
No, I agree. Like, the Sydney Noma wasn't amazing. The Mexican Noma was fucking unbelievable. But why do we look at it like that from that frame of view in Mexico when we didn't look at it like that here? You know, like,
I think there was people. I think there was people who kind of did raise that kind of specter, you know, about his visits to to the indigenous communities. Yeah. In all honesty, and I, you know, like I'm not going to fucking drop any names in the shit, but it was definitely people talking about that, and indigenous leaders talking about the kind of indifference that was shown in the community, and definitely. You know, but the raving that happened over social media.
That's on, like, the tourism companies that are...
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
That brought the, you know, that paved them to come out here, not putting something together, something more significant for them to you know, contribute to while they were here, I think.
But I'm not trying to beat up, but I'm just there was a very much a part of me that resonated with that Pete Wells article. I totally agree with you. You know, like, sometimes you should just shut the fuck up and just do your job, and your job is to go review restaurants, and if you've got a problem with that, then you should deal with what you do for a living. I get that argument, but also, he raised some pretty good points. Like,
I saw it as him putting the boot into Noma because he knew he would get readers.
Yeah. But isn't the idea as well, like, when they were here, that hopefully it brings more attention to this part of the world or that part of the world, and people go and explore the culture and generate more money in tourism and la 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 la.
But it, you know, surely if that was like, he would, they would not turn up, and no juggernaut would turn up unless it was going to be at least as beneficial for them as it was for the local community. So, you know, like
they whole definitely thing come
of,
out
as the restaurateur, yeah, as the kind of as the kind of advocate for social change. Like, you got to be on fucking, you got to have everything out in the open, and then it's got to be really clear.
They definitely wouldn't be there or here or Japan if they weren't making money. Yeah. 100%. 100%.
But like, you know, just on that, you know, supporting the community in some way, like Mitch was there for one meal.
Yeah.
For Noma, but then you ate like 100 tacos. You and Hongi ate 100 tacos. And then we did an episode about it. And yeah, you spent 20 minutes talking about Noma and then a full hour talking about all everywhere the tacos else you ate, yeah, elsewhere, you know. And I think a lot of people... Yeah. Have, you know, taken down places to go visit when they do go there, because, you know, yeah, Australians do visit Mexico.
Yeah, yeah,
totally. But I mean, what we're talking about is a boost in tourism, which should no doubt be good for the local community. But, you know, what type of tourism is it? Is this, you know, I was looking at it. Where else was it in Mexico again? Like the little
Tulum.
In Tulum. Well, like the Seminyak of fucking Mexico, yeah, now basically. Seems.
Yeah.
You know, and we've seen what happened to Seminyak, and kind of what can we really kind of sit here and argue that Australian influence and Australian culture in Bali has been a positive one?
No, 100%.
You know, and I kind of, you know, these things have to be tempered with a little bit of like, I understand the positive arguments, but there has to be a fucking full thorough investigation of your own, of what happens after it, you know, and that influence, you know, we want to show people about the native, you know, native culture, and yeah, it's fine. But what happens when you're gone, and when you're not there anymore to be a fucking protector of that? If that's the place that you want to put yourself, you know, I don't know, man.
I think everyone
raises
needs
a lot of questions.
Yeah,
to
I think everyone needs to be fully aware that they wouldn't be there if they weren't making a profit out of being there.
Totally.
And they wouldn't be there if there wasn't someone behind it, backing it. And making it happen as well.
And making even more money.
Yeah. I asked Red Zeppi at the time of Australia, I said, do you think about your legacy when you leave and what's going to happen? And he says, no, I don't really care. Yeah. It's not about a legacy. It's nothing about that. I just want to create really delicious food and surprise my customers. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, and maybe that's just true. He just wants to...
valid? You know, especially under the guise of... for me, if that's the case, then fucking he's double damned, especially in Mexico. And he can go fuck himself. Because that's full on. But I just want to surprise my customers, the wealthy jet set, by coming into this community and fucking taking all the good things from them, and for the value of my customers, for people paying the money, you know, that to me is even more of a crisis.
I think that because he might have said that to you,
yeah,
but that's not the image that's put out there, right?
He said it to me on the record in an interview. But no, it's definitely not the... It's not the image that's being put out there from marketing. And they put a lot of stuff back in. They did put a lot of stuff with Aboriginal communities here. And I don't know what the legacy of that is.
It's not sustainable. If you're coming out here and you're doing one thing with one community once, no one gets anything good out of that. That's the one that runs a charity that you know, when we started out, we do work in communities and jails and the kind of... The biggest criticism of previous organisations that tried to do similar music based work with young people in out of reach communities was that they would only go there once, get what they wanted, and then never come back. Mm. And so we made sure we got the funding to go there for, you know, 3 years.
Yep.
Before you went anywhere for the
first impression
time.
I got from Australia and from Mexico is that he's just got a mad hong for new ingredients and discovering hard on.
All right.
Damn.
He's got a mad Dan Hong.
and that underlied everything else.
If Pete Wells is aware of that side of Red Zeppi, I think he would have written a much more powerful article if he did go eat there and say, like, while the food was impressive, I can't not mention this because I haven't seen any critics talking about that side of thing, and instead you just get this article that you're like, what's the agenda here? Like,
it's almost like Rene didn't invite him,
right?
Well, why aren't critics writing about that? Because no, they're like, at first and foremost,
I don't know any
the
critics.
Majority of critics are fucking journalists, and it's their fucking job to be inquisitive, and they're not in the job. So, you got to answer that question.
Yeah. I'd say almost 95% of critics who went to that would have been paid for. Mm. Put your accommodation up for a couple of nights in Tulum, pay for your flights, If you're big enough, you can probably demand business for that. Yeah, and so if you turn around and write a review which really looks at all that shit, then the next time the Noma pops up in fucking Greenland, you're not being invited to that one, mate. And they're worried about that. That's the way that travel journalism works these days. It's a lot of free trips and free for meals, and a lot of international food journalism is pretty similar to that also. Yeah, that's what might have happened there. I think there'll be articles written about it in the coming months, looking back now, after it finishes. But I don't think any journalist who's been paid to go over there is going to come out with a scathing thing. And Pete Wells, the only thing I'd say with Pete's thing, and the commentary I read, which I'd agree with, like, he kind of had it both ways by saying, I'm not going to review Noma.
But I'm going to write about it.
I'm going to write about me not reviewing it. And all the commentary that I wanted to say that would have done in my review, I'm going to do it like this. And... yeah, so I think you can't have it two ways, mate. But I agree with Jake that a lot of Pete's points were fucking pretty bang on. Yeah,
it was. It's pretty apparent. Like, I was there. I got my trip was covered as well, not by Noma, but my trip was covered.
Business?
No, not business. We had we got a premium economy. We had a budget to work within, and then, you know, so I wouldn't have gone because I couldn't afford to go otherwise. But it was an amazing experience, and not just Noma, but Tulum and all the local side of it was phenomenal as well. But it's very apparent how poor the township of Tulum is and how much money is around that on the coast. Like, it's just big resort after big resort after big resort after big resort. So it's already being sort of taken advantage of.
Yeah.
And not that that excuses it. And I don't think any time chefs are out there being social warriors and saying food's going to change the world and this big sort of circle jerk that happens at the top of the game, like, I don't agree with that anyway. But the meal itself was fucking unbelievable. And the experience of being in Tulum with so many other chefs from around the world who made the trip to just go and hang out and eat all the local food too was really amazing. So I can't speak to the before and after, but getting to go there was really special, and getting to see the bit of the culture and all that kind of thing was really amazing as well. So
To take it back to the other article about Sydney, in which he mostly focused on those five restaurants that we spoke about, but he also had, like, you know, a little paragraph of other things he said he did when he was in Sydney. He mentions going to Cabramatta and finally having Vietnamese food that's what was made interesting because they used herbs besides mint.
What?
It's like, where the fuck? What the fuck Vietnamese are you eating?
American, bro. Yeah, right. American. Yeah, that also shows, like, Asian food in Western countries in the Northern Hemisphere is just terrible. And that shows, like, how fucking good we have it here and how spoiled we are.
Yeah.
I'd agree with that. It's very, very... you know, coming from the UK, it's very different.
Yeah.
It's like I came here... My wife had always told me, like, oh, it's way different, way better when you come down to Australia. And it, to me, it takes you a while to get used to it, because you're completely on a different page. You're like, really? This is what, like, this is
this
it?
This is what I'm supposed to
first time. Kenny used to order curries and get chips and curry sauce. Chinese food, chips time. And curry sauce.
Just glowing nitro green. I love it.
But, like, we always talk about, whenever someone does something wrong, in our eyes, in terms of, you know, representing Sydney's dining scene on an international level, we always call them out for not doing it the way that we would. But what do we want out of an article like that?
Yeah, I think you're right. Like, surely the
really
positive exposure for the city is, like, you know, and praising the chefs for doing fucking great work. Like, it's like that's the cusp of it, I suppose. Like, the missed point on the Asian food's a bit of a fucking knock to the chin.
I think it's always hard because whenever those things happen, it's always a PR company behind it, or tourism, whoever, South Wales or Australia or whatever. But it's the PR side of that organising that, and they don't have that in-depth knowledge of what makes the city what it should be. And I'm not, like, those are five pretty good restaurants to go to.
Yeah, amazing.
But they're not.
But if you come to Sydney and you don't go taking the GCs after one of those meals,
then you
haven't fucking seen food in Sydney.
If you don't go to Chinatown, if you don't go to Cabra and do it properly, if you don't you know, like, there's so much more to what makes Sydney.
Yeah, why didn't you get a meal at Chat Time, Spice AM?
Yeah,
or, you know, have the LARP at fucking what's his name's place? You know, Thompson's new joint. Like, you gotta kind of understand Sydney a little bit further. I think
It would have been 2 days. I reckon he was here tops. I reckon he would have done two.
Well, how would you guys have eaten? If you had 2 days in Sydney, I wouldn't eat any of those. I'd eat at Momofuku. Not to bad downplay any of those restaurants.
I'd put Automata and Esta at Momo probably, but I'd also say, yeah, go to Chinatown and just fucking eat all the things. Go to GC's.
Go to
Cabramatta, and then on the way back, go to Auburn.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, in no way talking shit on those restaurants. Like, they're fucking the best that the Sydney has to offer. Yeah. I love them all dearly. But it's kind of...
It's like, go to Frat Paz.
If I wanted to see... Yeah, exactly.
Go to 10 Million, have a drink. Totally, yeah. You know, you've got to do more than one thing in a night. Yeah. Like, when we travel, we don't go to fucking one meal. You know, you hit four places in a night. You know what I mean? And that's how you get the fucking feel of the city in 2 days. You know, you can't just go, oh, well, this PR... And you got to talk to the industry too. Like, you can't just go, oh, this PR person... told me I have to go to this thing because she knows this PR person.
Yeah, because they represent represent these restaurants.
The way I do it, if I'm in it, because I've wrote many articles in other countries around the world and in cities.
All right,
so
mate, settle down.
Oh, fuck off. I know what Pete would have had to do, and I could be wrong. He could have been here for a week. He could have been here for a week. No, I don't think so. And so you go in there and you just fucking hit it. It's like, bam, man, here's a dinner. Go to a bar. Like, where's the best bar in town? And then ask the bartenders. Ask the other fucking staff. Hey, like, where should I go
tonight if I really want to taste the ruckus?
Completely. He might have done that as well. I don't know. But I think for the amount of time he had here, which would have been fuck all, I think it was a pretty good job. Apart from the Asian thing, I think it was
and anything that shines a bit of light overseas on what's happening here, and like you said, it was an overall positive thing that said the cooking in Sydney is fantastic, you know, and if it brings more people down here and then it boosts people going outside of Key and, you know, the big names, then it's good for everyone. Hopefully.
Absolutely, it is.
I'd agree.
Very much deserve it.
So we got some emails that I think we could everyone would enjoy getting a little bit of input to. We've got some industry-based ones and then some just more general food email stuff. Do you want to go through them now?
Sure. Yeah.
You can send an email to us by emailing us at themitchinpodcast@gmail.com as Jordan did so. Not Jordan. He, for fear of ridicule, I'll call myself MJ, so ignore that call. Hey, boys. I really enjoy your podcast and am a 28-year-old chef from the Gong and have been cooking for 14 years. I trained under the old guard, if you will, and as an apprentice, I was doing 12 to 14-hour days for $297 a week, and I didn't care. It was what you did. I never wanted to be a chef. I fell into it after school, and I've loved the whole industry since. My question is, like Mitch and most of your guests, I run my kitchen without what I thought at the time was unnecessary yelling and abuse. However, nowadays, my apprentice and all my mates appreciates, and young chefs don't have that grind, attitude or work ethic, and expect good pay, good hours, and a fucking picture-perfect job. Is this a result of the... By the way, there's no full stops in this entire email. is this a result of the new young guard attitude or just the younger generation's attitude in general? Was the yelling and no bullshit approach what made us the chefs we are? Or were we just raised in a different time? I would love to hear your opinions and potentially talk about this in depth more.
I think it's a generational thing. Like, we notice it all the fucking time. And anyone I speak to, and it's like, it's front of house. It can be in any job. Something we keep hearing is, I need to work. Like, you got a 22-year-old kid being like, I need work-life balance. Yeah. And they're doing like 48 hours a week, going out, taking heaps of rack and heaps of pingers, and then kind of blaming their job for the fact that they're tired and that they're not on $65,000 a year.
Yeah.
And like, and they can barely maintain the responsibility.
They can barely do the fucking job they have.
And it's like, and we get all the time. It's like, it's getting more and more apparent, like more and more apparent.
And
like
there's no repercussions now. Like if you're bad at your job as a chef or a front of house or a bartender or whatever, there's no repercussions for that because everyone's so fucking short staffed.
Yeah,
just need hands. They're not going to fire you.
Yeah.
And it's also impossible to fucking fire anyone now as well.
We had a staff member the other day, literally, they got called up on something by their chef, and they just looked at him and said, I don't care. And we're literally in a position, because staff being on holidays, and with that short staff, we could not fire her the next day.
Yeah.
Like, for just literally, like, as coming out with it, I don't care.
What are you here for?
Because they want fucking money and it's easy. Because we're, like you said, you nailed it. Like, we can't fire people. Not because we're afraid of the fucking repercussions from, you know, like
government,
you
know,
like the fair work. On,
yeah,
it's because you can't fuck. You don't have someone to run food that night.
And even if you do fire them, or you get a little, like, you have a go at them for fucking something up, and they quit the next day, there's no repercussions because they'll just walk into a job the very next day because everyone needs someone.
Yeah, that's true.
So there's no. And then they go, like I've said it before, I've worked at this place, that place. I only did 3 weeks in each, but I'm the sickest chef out now because I've got all these places on my resume.
Yeah, that's it.
You know, you can't fucking peel an onion, but you want to earn 65, 70 grand a year.
Can I ask a question, though? It's one thing that Kenny and I are really aware of, and, you know, of our influence on the industry, you know, as people who are business owners, and you know, for yourself as well, Mitch, you know, like you own two businesses now, and it's kind of where the next generation of people who will mold the kind of the expectations of the employee, of the employer on the employee, and vice versa. And one thing that has stopped in kitchens is the screaming and the yelling and the physical abuse to a great degree, and that's been as a positive change, I believe, from young chefs like yourself. Going, I don't want to fucking deal with this, so I'm not going to have it in my kitchen. I didn't learn anything from it, so I'm not going to have it. With the pay thing, I think that, and the work-life balance, I think, you know, for our, well, it's not, I think, for our management staff, we're putting into place mechanisms to stop them from working over 50 hours a week in our venues because we know that we get, and it's like, it's just science.
You get more out of them
and you get more effective work and just bleeding someone 65 hours a week to fucking save some labour costs is actually a really poor way to spend your money.
Yeah.
But, like, do you, with the that added kind of problem that we have, like, where do you, like, I'm interested to know your kind of ideas on that. We kind of at the top level are rewarding our staff by working, by getting them to work less, but at the bottom level, it's a struggle to get them to even fucking turn up for 40 hours and be focused.
Yeah, that's, I always, anytime someone asks me for advice, I always say it's short-term sacrifice for long-term gain. If you want to make it to a position that you guys are in, you had to work your ass off and learn and earn respect, etc., etc. And you can't do that by not fucking caring.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So it's not even that I want people to work their ass off for me. I want them to work their ass off for themselves. You know? And I'm happy to give people work-life balance. I want people coming in to work happy. But I want them to have responsibility for their actions. And I want them to care about what they're doing. Because I want them to leave and be a better chef and move up and go on to bigger and better things. Because just like we're pushing on the Matt Morans and the Neil Perrys and the fucking Peter Gilmores and whoever it may be of the industry above us, the generations above us, who the fuck's going to come and push us out? You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, totally.
We were probably too young when we started kicking up a shit about not getting the recognition and la 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 that we wanted and thought we deserved, which we probably didn't at the time. But that put everybody on notice and put the older generation to pick up their game too and not let rest on their laurels. But who's going to come up and do that to us and push the industry forward and keep the industry growing and moving?
When you can't even get a fucking sous chef that's like wants to work.
So what's going to fucking happen? Are we just, you know, is it all going to be lowest common denominator shit and no one's going to have any fucking skills or care about anything, and that's not good for anybody?
Yeah.
Or, you know, like there are a few young people out there working their ass off for themselves to be better, to earn respect, to build themselves a reputation. Like, you can't paint the whole industry with a brush, but
they're
few and far between.
One thing I've been thinking about a lot is, you know, obviously everyone's aware of the fucking incredible growth in Sydney restaurants over the last fucking 18 months. And, you know, like, maybe it's just the fact that maybe there might be an element of, like, all of those venues have just one or two key people, whereas there used to be such a concentration because we'd all work together because there was only so many great restaurants. You think back to 2007, 2008, how many great restaurants were there in Sydney? Like, in comparison to, like, where good chefs are cooking now, there's fucking heaps more. But that depth of being able to, like, a chef can get through service, but can they fucking nurture and mentor that next generation?
Yeah.
Can the front of house team, like, they get through every single night by the skin of their teeth, but they don't have a sommelier and a junior? you know, working underneath them, like training and then training their wine waiters underneath them.
That's
definitely
part of the problem as well. Definitely. Be like you said, everyone spreads.
So is that Mervac's fucking fault?
Sucking all the staff out.
It is. And that's a byproduct of the industry becoming so popular.
Hate them.
Which is, you know.
Take your fucking car parks and fuck off.
Yeah, it's a hard thing because growth and knowledge of the industry is good in some ways, but we're so fucking stretched and there's way too many fucking restaurants.
I don't think there's been any major benefit to the industry.
No, there hasn't
been. Like, if anything, it's going to be a long-term fucking issue that's going to be played out for a little bit of short-term gain from some restaurateurs who've gone in, made a packet on a fucking deal.
The big guys are going to keep making money and it's going to get harder and harder and harder for the little guys. You're a medium guy right now.
The issue is approaching all those places, Circular Quay, Bangarangaroo, Tram Sheds, whatever, and they're all, you know, great people you guys are mates with who have chosen to move there, and that's good cash. But then where do the Acmes of the future come from,
exactly,
or whatever, the hard charges of the future, the ones how that do, they are targeting to go down there, where's the Marys the come from, like if it's just all these fucking cookie cutter things.
It's drawing people off of the high street and sucking that personality out of the restaurants, because you don't get a chance to put your real stamp on it. When, like, we got Sean Rowan Barangaroo, and basically just within like 15 minutes we're like, can we play music as loud as you want? They're like, oh yeah, within reason. And I was like, well, what if can we just have cakes here? But what if people move them and they fucking spill it over there? They're like, oh, well. And I'm like, oh, we're right, we can't do it, we can't do it. And then I had a conversation within with the same guy a while later and explaining to him how, you know, people in the industry kind of fucking hate what they're doing, and he couldn't believe it. He's like, I thought we were doing a great thing, you
he's
know
a lovely giving man,
people,
way,
yeah, he's a lovely man, yeah, and we won't mention names, like, because he just literally, he was like, I thought we were giving people opportunity, you know, like vibe, like adding vibrancy to the eating scene. I was like, no, but you're like, you're taking something,
you're pillaging
and just diluting it like so hard that it's hard to fucking get see the great ones, or for us for us all to have great teams.
And
in
it's
a
become
restaurant.
Too easy to open a fucking restaurant as well at the same time. It's like places that should never have fucking gotten backing and would never have lasted unless there was so much marketing and PR and spin that was put behind by these massive companies. They would never have people walking in their doors because the offering's not good enough. They don't have enough personality. They're not saying anything at all other than just being another spot to sit your ass down and put your face into another bowl of fucking something.
When are you opening a poke bowl place?
Well, thank you for the segue.
Thanks so much to MJ. MJ for that email.
A fucking great question.
I don't know if we actually answered his question.
it's impossible to answer. Yeah. There's so many contributing factors.
But he's right. But if there's anyone willing or wants to come work in Sydney, we've got jobs for all of you.
Fuck, hey,
you
got jobs.
What's when you were working your way up, what's the worst thing a higher up yelled at you?
It's hard to pick them out.
I blocked all that shit out.
Yeah, I got bollocked all the time. Because I was a smart ass little shit. I got bollocked all the time, but it made me a better it made me understand that you're working for someone whose name is on the door and whose reputation and balls are on the line, so to speak. You know what I mean? Like, it's their life. And if you're in there fucking around, you're fucking around with their livelihood, and they might have $100,000 of their own money tied up somewhere, and you're in there not giving a fuck and putting out an inferior product that customers then see, that then means customers don't come back or they get a bad review and it makes the restaurant quiet and all that kind of shit. Like, you have to realize that as someone's employee, whether you're front of house or whatever, it might just be a job for you, but it's somebody else's life. And it's different when you're working for fucking a big company, but when you're working in a small business,
you fucking cunt.
You're not fired though. You don't go anywhere. Don't leave, please.
He's $5.
The worst thing ever been yelled at me while working was actually by someone high up at Mervac.
Never DJ in this town again.
I was DJing at the Noma Sydney closing party at Harpoon Harry. And because Mervac weren't, that's their space, right?
It was Lendlease.
Sorry, apologies to Mervac. Great people. But the lady who works for Lendlease was so fucking hammered. And I was trying to play to everyone that night. So, like, the
the chefs from America wanted to hear like 80s hair metal, and all of the Nordic guys wanted to hear fucking like
death metal.
Exactly. And ABBA.
Yeah. And then so you would play to one group and the other group would be upset, blah blah, and this drunk woman comes up to me, she's like, "No one's having a good time, just play the stuff we want to hear."
Did you put "You're the Voice"
know,
on?
Whenever she didn't know a song, she'd like roll her eyes and she'd be like, "Oh, you're terrible, this is just no good, you'll never work in this city again, blah, blah. Don't you know who I am, blah, blah, blah." And I got her removed from the venue.
That's the greatest.
So we've got one more question here that I think will be a good one for all of us to contribute to. This one comes from Ben. He says that he started getting into podcasts this year and stumbled across your Loose Pod a couple months back. Find it bloody hilarious, even if you don't like craft beer, haha. So I own Backbone on the Gold Coast, an Asian influenced restaurant and bar, yes, craft beer, and Minimal Intervention Wines. Reason to email is that my girlfriend and I are hitting up Sydney for an adventure this weekend, actually. Just found out about the Vanilla Max thing that Mitch is cooking at.
So
I'm going to check that out. I'm going to check a few of the places like Pinbone Fred's, Ms. G's, maybe LP's. But was wondering if we should be checking any others out and if you had any brekkie or brunch recommendations as well.
Room 10, Adam Wolfie from Formula of Yellow is doing a couple soups at Room 10 this week before he takes over Brose for the next 2 months.
Yep.
I had the matzo ball soup yesterday. It's fucking off the chain. That's a definite. And Room 10's food in general and coffee is really great. Neighborhood coffee, go and see Sean. Boone Cafe.
Boone Cafe for sure.
Sometimes I hit Chat Thai for brunch as well. Mm-hmm. And that's about it from me.
I'd come here. I'd fucking get on the reshes, finger your missus out the back. I think you and Maya's playing, and then have a come down late lunch at Good Luck Pinbone.
Looks like that Wu Tang recruit
has kicked in.
Definitely not what I have planned for this weekend.
Looks like someone tasted the ruckus.
Yeah, I'll look. If I was coming to Sydney, I would only like. There's only one place I'd always go if I didn't was in town. I'd go to Fratelli Paradiso.
Yeah.
Because if you're into fucking good wine, then you know, go down there. Brekkie. The food's fucking amazing. Yeah. Or 10 William Street if you fucking don't want to have a big meal. You know, like I mean, they're just such world class joints.
Or, yeah, pop in the bar at Momofuku as well if you have time.
Yeah, it's fucking delicious.
Yeah.
One last email. I don't even think it's the question. I just this one just came in and it's really funny. This one comes from Albie. Aka Albie One Kenobi. Hi, cunts. Been listening to the podcast for a few fucking years. I listen to it while I deliver food to restaurants. I was a chef for about 15 years. Kids and wife fucked that up, but can't be happier now. Hashtag Providor. In Adelaide for a funeral, and my bro, dad, and I went to Africola for dinner. Holy fuck, what a great meal. Had the feed me and wine pairing. Great food, interesting wine and drinks, great service. My brother was frothing, in brackets, he is from Tasmania. Not sure why. My old man was off his face and loving it. Anyway, I wouldn't have known about Africola if it wasn't for you cunts and your podcast. Keep up the good work. Keep on being whinging cunts because I always check out the one-star reviews first.
Yes.
Glad Mitch has learned how to hold a microphone. Drunk casts were good. Later, Albie One Kenobi.
Well, a legend.
That's great. Unbelievable. Yeah.
I think you don't see Duncan's fucking face everywhere, though. Yeah. Like everyone knew about Apricola.
Makes me feel sick.
I love you, Duncan.
I was saying that like pretty much every guest on the Mitchin was at the Lansdowne that night. Fucking Duncan was here.
Yeah.
What was he even doing in Sydney?
He was in again. He was here
last night, too.
And I was like, dude, you should just move here. He's like, yeah, everyone keeps telling me that.
Hey, Duncan, you can make in this fucking town, mate.
I got invited to
the Mervac Dunk.
That'd be awesome. No, I got invited to a dinner at a fucking Airbnb thing with Duncan and Marco Pierre White cooking. Just the two of them. Yeah. I was sick. Like, what's going on?
Don't go.
Okay.
He's going to open a restaurant in Sydney called Mervacola.
That's so good.
All right, is that it?
That's it.
I got to get tattooed.
Thank you for having
me. What are you getting tattooed?
A wombat.
A wombat.
Yeah. On your face.
Thanks so much to our guests today. We got Jakey and Kenny from the Lansdowne. Come through and eat a pizza, have some pingers.
Yes.
Where do you go to get the pingers here?
very hard to find pingers. Check in the back of the lounges.
We should do an episode soon, just comparing what pingers used to be like to what they're like today. Yeah. Man, apprentices these days, they don't know what pingers are. And Callan, you can find online
at Callan Boys on Instagram.
That's right.
And Twitter as well. Sometimes I use that.
It's a good service.
Rare.
Writing for
Good Food. Writing for goodfood.com.au.
You finished all your reviews for
Good
the
Food
guide?
Tuesday lift out in Epicure and Sydney Morning Herald.
You finished all your
reviews?
I finished. I beat Callan this year, everybody.
I had to sneak off quite sleepishly from Miffy Rigby today to come record this. Where are you going? I was like, fucking nowhere.
You were like, Callan boys, ain't nothing to fuck off.
What do you got in that box? Like, nothing, fuck off,
mate. You can find us online, facebook.com/TheMitchinPodcast. Send us an email, themitchin@gmail.com. And don't buy any Wu-Tang related liqueurs this weekend.
The grunters.
Right. Yeah, bro, grunters. See you next week.
Step onto the legendary clay courts of Roland Garros, where the world's best players battle it out at the French Open for a chance to win a Grand Slam title. Tennis Channel Plus is your place to watch. Stream every court from your phone or smart TV live in HD. See the action unfold as legends fight for glory and new rivalries emerge. Daily live coverage begins Monday, May 20th, with match replays on demand so you never miss a moment. From the first serve to the final point, Roland Garros promises unforgettable moments and new chapters in tennis history. Stream now with Tennis Channel Plus to be there when it happens.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.